I'm introducing a friend of mine, Mario, with whom I speak on a regular basis. So you're going to listen to part of our conversation.
I'm really starting to be able to heal my healing, and I believe my ALS has stopped. I really feel that.
Okay. That's good. Let me suggest a couple of other areas to look at. I'll make a note. Actually, you can do this on your computer. You should go to this website, SidRoth.org. SidRoth.org. He's somewhere up there in Canada. On that website, recently, and I think it probably is still there, but you should check it, is an interview with a guy named Dr. Jim Richards. It's about a half hour, a little bit less. It's a very good interview. Guy does a great job explaining that. Plus, it shows pictures and so on, so you can really get the message. To me, there are two major messages, but many more than that, actually. Well, let me make it three. Jim Richards had the most terrible upbringing you can imagine. So the fact is, he now has three PhDs and he's doing tremendous good in the world, says that the beginning doesn't have to have the control over what follows. Number two, he, at the very end, he gives a prayer. He actually uses it with Sid Ross. I think it's a fantastic version of the prayer. So I copied that down. I listened to it many times in order to copy it down. So I'm going to, I'll send that to you. I send it out to my coaches, suggesting that it is very powerful to use. So I'll send that to you in an email. The third thing is, in the middle of the interview, Sid says to Jim, "So why did you have a congenital kidney problem? Why did you have that?" And he said, and he explains it, before he was born, he in prayer, meditation, it could have been doing the codes, but he didn't know the codes, although I'm told by one of our coaches that he refers to Alex Lloyd in a couple of his books. But he was praying, and he heard his father and his mother having an argument, and he heard his mother's thoughts. This is before he was born, and he thinks that that collision of energies, if you will, impacted his kidneys and interfered with their normal development. I told you I was reading a book, and I've now finished it, called Healing This Voltage by Jerry Tennant, T-E-N-N-A-N-T. Dr. Tennant, medical doctor, has YouTube videos that are worth watching. So I just finished the book, and near the end of the book, Tennant says, if you don't know about this, you need to know about it. It's called prenatal, before birth, re-imprinting. Because we are imprinted when we're in our mother's wombs. And I went, I know that because I talk to clients and that subject comes up, either experientially or we discuss it theoretically. And Jim Richards just mentioned it, and I'm familiar from other reading that this is true, and my own studies, I know this to be true. And so then I've researched that. There is a group, very, very small in Texas, that deals with prenatal re-imprinting. So I think the website is PNRI.org. They have several websites. Another one, Transforming Dragons, just like the sounds, Transforming Dragons, and I think it's a... I think that's .com. So, if you look at that, you go, man, that's interesting. So one of the books that either prenatal, PNRI as they refer to it, and so I've communicated via email by the guy, the PhD in Texas, and bought a CD from them, and it just arrived, and I'm reading their information. Somewhere in the literature, either in voltages, hearing is voltage, or in the PNRI information, they recommended a book. I forget what the title is. It's on my desk. Basically, The Life of the Unborn Child by a medical doctor, written in 1981, just arrived in from Amazon yesterday, by a Dr. Thomas Verney, V-E-R-N-Y. And
I'm sorry to interrupt here. The second website that you had mentioned, would you be able to repeat that?
Yes, Transforming Dragons, like Magic Dragon, like Transforming Dragons. The idea is that these scary thoughts that we would pick up in utero are like the seeds of dragons. They scare us from that point on in our lives and show up. Got it?
Mario, yeah, I got that one. Mario was just saying there was another one.
PNRI.org. SidRoth.org. I had to take a break this morning because of somebody was cleaning my office, and so I'm starting to read The Life of the Unborn Child, and I'm reading this section to Mary Ann on page 20. And so this book is from 1981, so there's been a huge advance since then in terms of technology and to be able to measure stuff. But nonetheless, this is, you know, an amazing book. So much so that I just called one of my clients who I know is like 12 months pregnant, saying, "You, I've got to get this book." She just answered me back in the email, "I will get it." And I'm having dinner Saturday night with a couple of clients, and the woman wants to have a baby. So it's like, "You got to get this." I have another client who, wedding I performed recently, who within the next year or two or three is going to start a family. She needs to understand this, how we impact the child. So it is amazing to me. It's amazing to me. I've been thinking this and saying this all along. When people say, I want to go analyze my life, and clear out all the cobwebs and all the erroneous beliefs, when should I start? When I was born? I said, nope. When in utero, 6 months? No. At conception? No. Start 3 months before you were born is my recommendation. Look at what your mother and your father are experiencing before you are conceived. And then you can recognize, think of it like this. Your mother is not only the gardener, but she's the soil that you are going to grow in. Look at your father. He is the gardener and is the one who is going to be planting the seed. And his seed and your mother's ovum are what create us physically. Now, their consciousness goes into that as well. And you go, okay, so what was their consciousness 3 months before you were born? What were they feeling? What were they going through financially and physically, emotionally, mentally? How secure were they in career and this and that and this and that and this and that? And if they show up with a hell of a lot of stress, it's like, And so on page 20, I was reading to Marianne as we were sitting there waiting for my office to be clean. Was look, talking about they have been able to measure the impact of cigarette smoking on a baby that's not yet born. If the mother smokes a cigarette, it causes anxiety in the baby because it reduces the amount of oxygen that is being delivered to the baby through the placenta. So the baby, I'm not getting enough. So they pick it up. Now you'd go, well, that makes for, if you're smoking vegetation and whatever chemicals they put into that stuff, you go, that makes sense. But here's another point. The mother doesn't actually have to smoke the cigarette, put it to her lips, or even light it. If she thinks about a cigarette, it can produce that anxiety in the baby. And so now the baby is all kinds of anxious. All I know is this threat, this, my oxygen is going to be, you know. And so on a neurochemical level, this baby is in huge anxiety because he knows at some point he's going to start to suffocate. But I know it's going to happen again. So that baby, if you can imagine, is like walking on eggshells or lying on eggshells because it knows this painful event is going to happen. Doesn't know when, just knows it's going to. So how's that for anxiety producing? You go, holy moly. So, what do we have going on for us? I would suggest that a lot of what we experience, and I describe it in multiple ways to you previously, it's kind of like when you were a little boy, your mother and your father dressed you in clothes. Oh, we're going to take you out, put on this little hat, put on this little bow tie, put on these shoes, put on these shorts, you know, that kind of routine. And we're going to take you out to go visit somebody, or we're going to take you shopping, or we're going to take you to church, or they dressed us up. No mystery there. But if you could imagine, we have been getting dressed in various neurochemicals by our mother and father this whole time as we're developing. And we're learning for that 9 months. Then you add in the trauma of birth, if there is, and the way we get born, there is. And you just go, Then you add in the first 6 months and conflicts and whatever else is going on. Bruce Lipton would say, since we don't have filters till we're about six or so, we're absorbing all the energy in our environment. Whatever is said, we take in. Whatever is felt, we take in. Whatever we hear, we take in. It's like, oh. So you just go, wow. There is a challenge. If you look at what your parents were experiencing, you can, now I know what might have been in the soil when I was growing. And that shapes the way I filter information. What do I want to do? Well, PNRI would say, you need to reprint. I don't know how to do that yet. But I would think that I do know how to do that using the healing codes. And so you go, I want to change the imprints. Almost like when I'm conceived, and for that first 9 months, I'm very impressionable, right? I'm like soft clay. Somebody could press on me with a finger, and it would leave a fingerprint. I'm very impressionable. You go, And so now I'm living my life with dents and fingerprints and pokes and pains and stabs and compliments and love and the lack of love and all. It's like, wow, you got a lot of dents, dude. You got a lot of good areas. Yep, probably got a lot of both. And so how do you get the dents out of the vehicle? That is, not the physical vehicle as much as the mental construct, the mental, who is Mario? Who am I? What am I capable of? What is life like? You go, Well, the conditions in my life, ALS for instance, my illness, say that I have some dents in my identity on a physical level, which would say, before it was physical, it's emotional. Before it's emotional, it's mental. I have some dents in my physical body. I have some dents in my emotional body. And before that, I have some dents in my mental body. I got to get them. I've got to use spirit to correct the dents in my mental body and in my emotional body. And then I know automatically my physical body is going to have the dents start disappearing. You go, this is real clear. This is real clear. So, what are the dents? Anxiety, fear, undeservingness, struggle, can't have, any number of things. Abandonment, insecurity. How do I get the dents out if I don't know exactly what the dents are? Yeah. Well, if I have a flat balloon here laying on my desk, I go, wow, this balloon is flat. I'm not certain of its shape. I wonder how I'm going to figure out what its shape is or what its capacity is. Why don't I add energy to it? Why don't I add kind of invisible energy, like air? I'll fill this with invisible energy. And this balloon will start to expand, and its shape will take what it was designed to be, and it'll have that shape. It'll be a round one, or a long one, or a this one, or a that one. I don't know. The way to do it is to inflate with energy this balloon. I'm saying that's what we do with the healing codes. This idea that I am going to open up to divine consciousness, to God, to spirit, and invite it, ask for it, and allow it to fill me up. So these dents that I'm currently experiencing, labeled ALS or this or that, will boom, boom, pop, pop, boom, pop these dents right out. I need to fill with spirit. How cool is that? And whatever beliefs that I have from my experiences from conception to now, if they serve me to occupy the shape that I've been designed for, cool. But if they don't support me, if they're dense, if they hold me back, they limit me, they restrict me, hey, you know what? I'm going to keep adding energy, and so those limitations, pop, pop. It's like, I can feel the resistance, you know, letting go of this belief that I thought was true, that our life is hard, a struggle, pain, can't have other people, not me, that sort of thing. Like, seeing bad, pop, pop, those things come out. How long does it take? I don't know. It takes as long as it takes. Same as everything else. Only a few things are really, really predictable. There is a sense of rhythm that's been designed by divine consciousness, the creator, right? High tide, low tide, seasonality. Not necessarily temperature, though, right? This winter, people up near neck of the woods were going, I can't tell if this is spring, summer, winter, or fall. It's January or February, but this is uncommonly warm. It's like, but you know, that you know how long it's going to be until June 21st, 2013 shows up. You pretty much can, I know. I know how long that's going to take to get here. Yeah, just about 1 year, exactly. High tide, low tide, how long does that take? About 6 hours in between. Every 6 hours it's going to go high to low, low to high. Yep, no mystery there. I told you that I had a family reunion in early August back in New York, and I checked on the tides. I can already tell you what the high tide and low tide times are each of the days of that family reunion, so we can go clamming or crabbing on one day and go swimming and fishing on another day, because we'll be able to organize and become aligned with natural rhythms. I'm not going to go high tide and go, what's wrong here? I can't go climbing. I can't see. I can't even stand. The water's too deep. It's like, dude, you can't change the tide, but you can get aligned with this energy flow of this natural rhythm. You can't go swimming up in a lake in Ontario in January. You go, it didn't ruin your day. You just need to wait 6 months or so, 7 months, 8 months, I don't know. You guys ever warm enough to swim in the lake up there? You go, that's right. What you're looking to do is become aware of the rhythm. Like, when do I start swimming in the water? Check the rhythm, find out when it's warm. When do you go climbing? When it's low tide. Oh. If you align with that energy, everything seems to be so easy. So easy. Oh, that was easy. Yeah. And for other people who don't know anything about rhythm, every time I want to go claiming it's high tide, it seems. Every time I want to play, it's getting dark. Every time it's late, I want to go to sleep. It's like, what's wrong with this world? It's like, there's nothing wrong with the world, dude. You just are not aware of the natural rhythms. So you're always fighting what is. The divine is trying to provide growth, nutrition and nourishment, healing, protection, fulfillment of need, work, survival, rhythm, all within the system of spiritual law and order. We reap what we sow, and we sow with our thoughts, our feelings, our words, and our actions. What do you want to experience? What harvest do you want? What do you want to reap? What effect do you want to experience of the things that you possibly can cause? Joy, health, happiness, love, success, kindness, generosity, compassion. Sow them, offer them to other people. It's very straightforward. Not necessarily easy because we have a lot of habits and we have prenatal imprinting and about a gazillion other things that we learned that are not true, are not effective. We go, oh, yeah, there's the challenge. There's the challenge. What I know is not so. In many cases, that's exactly it. That's exactly it. We're navigating in life with a compass that does not work. I can't tell north from south, east from west, up from down. It's like, I might explain why I bump into walls a lot. That might be why I do things and I have to do them again and again and again before I get them right. Yeah. Trial and error. It's a good teacher, but the tuition is very expensive. Better to be aware and do it once, do it elegantly, do it effectively, and love the result. Boom, boom. Walter Russell used to do that. I've referred to him before. Philosophy.org. Through book, you can download the book about him, The Man Who Tapped the Secrets of the Universe. Walter Russell was reputed to have lived five lifetimes in one lifetime, and so the author of this book, Glenn Clark, said, how do you do that? How do you do that? He said, I do it a couple of different ways, one of which is I devote 2 hours to a given project, and then I change the project and devote 2 hours to it, and then I change it and devote 2 hours to another one. That way I never get bored, I'm always fresh, and I don't get tired. But before I take any physical action, I meditate and I go into prayer and I go to the quotes, source of all knowledge, capital S, capital A, capital K, source of all knowledge. Another word for God, another phrase that means divine consciousness or spirit. He said, I take an idea, I take a question to the source of all knowledge, and I do that as often as I need to until it's clear to me, until the effect is clear, and then I implement it on a physical level. Walter Russell, by the third grade education, was world famous in 5, 6, 7 different areas. Scientist, musician, philosopher, author, athlete, horseman, painter, sculptor. Let me see if I've left anything out. Speaker. And you go, So Glenn said to him, when you get the idea, why don't you just implement it? He said, why would I do that? If it's not clear to me what the end result is, that means I'm going to bump into walls, I'm going to make mistakes, I'm going to have to do things over and over again. I'm going to waste a tremendous amount of time. Why would I do that? If it's not clear to me what the result is, why would I start implementing it? It's just a waste of time and effort and money. I'm not doing that. Oh, and businessman. He is the guy that invented the concept of cooperative housing. He was, I guess he was born in the middle of the country, Tennessee or Kentucky or somewhere like that. And so later on in his life, he's in Manhattan, in New York City, of all places. That's the the main market. That's the toughest place. If you're going to succeed in business and you can succeed there, you can succeed anywhere. So he got this idea and he took it into his meditation and he said to his bankers and his real estate people and insurance people, I want to implement this concept. And they go, can't be done. He was a real estate developer. He said, can't be done. Bankers said, can't be done. Real estate people, can't be done. Insurance people, can't be done. And to every one of them, he said, of course it can be done. I've already seen it. And he implemented it. And it was successful. But ultimately, he thinks it was a failure because greed, the greed of the bankers, the greed of the real estate people, the greed of the insurance people corrupted the concept. He said, you cannot violate the law of equal exchange. If you want something, you have to give energy in order to get it. You have to devote equal energy in order to get it. Not much different than the law of cause and effect. We reap what we sow. So he said, what happened is, people wanted to reap, they didn't want to sow. They wanted more than their share. They didn't want to put any energy into it. It's not going to happen. You can't violate that law. You want something? Invest energy into it. Now, the energy forms are different. If I'm a farmer, I'm going to plant a seed in the soil. But I want to get tomatoes. I want to get squash. I want to get corn. I want to get potatoes. What energy do I add? Care and nurturing, weeding, watering. I'm going to devote my energy, I'm going to direct it into those plants so they produce what I want. Now, if you look at it and say, well, you planted a seed and you gave it water and, you did a few maintenance kind of things, but here you've got hundreds and thousands of pounds of crop. That doesn't look equal. Yeah. Energetically, it's equal. If you put it on a scale, you go, well, I can't weigh your energy, dude. Does that mean you didn't add it? No, you didn't see me out there watering and weeding and doing this, and you didn't see me doing that. You didn't see me investing my energy, talking to my crops. You didn't see me caring for them. Oh, that counts? Yes, it counts. Adding your mental, emotional, physical, and spiritual energy to the thing you are trying to grow. What's the thing we're trying to grow here? Healthy Mario. That's the harvest. That's the crop. Healthy Mario. Can you see it? Well, I don't know. If I look in the mirror, that's not what I would see. If I look at the picture in the emails, that's not what I would see. So, yeah, it hasn't been harvested yet. It hasn't been harvested yet. We are still in the growing season of healthy Mario. Oh, that's cool. So what do? We keep adding energy to the structure I'm referring to as healthy Mario. What is the structure? It's this guy that's going to be walking across the stage, taking up a position next to a podium, talking to an audience of people, largely people who are still in the forest of fear of one illness or another, probably a bunch of them with ALS, going, we don't know how to find our way out. So I found my way out, and I want to tell you about my travel. I want to tell you about my journey. Ideally, it will have some value to you in your own journey, but I'm going to talk about it. I see that, Mario. You need to see that, Mario. That Mario showing up, shining a light of your discovery of how to find your way out of this forest, this swamp, this tanglement of ALS by connecting to spirit and inflating this image of healthy Mario, so the dents that have been in this image, this structure, since conception, pop, 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 they are removed. And you shine a light on this possibility to that audience filled with people who are struggling with their own dents and, frankly, don't even know that that's what the problem is. Oh, I think I'm down a quart of medication. Oh, I think I need a couple of shots of medication. Oh, I think I need some capsules and pills and... Okay. That's not how you're going to find your way out of the forest. You're going to inflate and make real Healthy Mario so you occupy the same space as Healthy Mario by connecting to it. You are the connecting link between divine consciousness and this guy I call Healthy Mario. You go, I want to reduce the geography between me and him. You bet you do. I want to reduce the amount of time it takes for me and him to occupy the same space. You bet you do. So how do I do that? You come into vibrational alignment with this concept of Healthy Mario. You come into tune with him. You draw upon divine consciousness, much like the plants I was describing, draw energy from the soil, draw energy from sunlight, and transform it into a healthy plant. You draw this energy from divine consciousness. I got it. That's what you do. Easy enough to say. Now, okay, I'm going to start on this path. I'm going to align with this energy, kind of like taking my balloon and putting it on the nozzle of, a canister of helium or something. That's how it would work at a party. And so I'm going to inflate these balloons, but if I don't hold it up to the nozzle of that canister, it's like, it just goes nowhere. I want to hook up to the divine. And I do that with my prayer as I do the codes. And then I allow myself to be filled. I already did what I did. I lined up, I hooked up to divine consciousness, and now that energy flows into me. How often should I do that? I would say as often as you want. If you're a little teeny balloon, it doesn't take much doing. If I got a balloon about the size of a softball, right? It's like, three or four, five, six breaths, and that's filled. That's complete. It's at its capacity. But how about if I'm greater than that little balloon, which you are? What if you have a greater opportunity? How about if the light that you can shine is even greater? And it is. Then it takes more doing. It takes a longer period of time for you to learn how to align with this energy so you can be filled. How do I know your opportunity is greater? Because the program that you're involved in, the curriculum that you're engaged in, when you take on a life-threatening illness where everybody throws up their hands and goes, we don't know, there's nothing we can do, I don't know, we don't even know what causes it and stuff. When you sign up for a curriculum like that, you know when you thrive, not just survive, but when you thrive through that, you have the potential to be a role model to a lot of people. So instead of being a little balloon, now you're a big balloon, you're a big model, you're a big light to a lot of people, and you can command a huge amount of attention. So what size are balloons? Well, you've already heard me describe the little one that would be on my desk. But in the fall, Mary Ann and I are taking a road trip with our puppy to Santa Fe, New Mexico. We've rented a house. We're going to be on a hillside overlooking the field that they use for an annual international balloon fest. All these magnificent, huge balloons are going to be inflated down on that field and rise into the sky so they can literally be seen from miles and miles away. We're going to be real close. But people that are very far away can be in awe at the height that these balloons can rise to. They're going to be in awe of the beauty that they see before them, and they'll be able to do that from miles and miles away. Why don't you be a light like that? Why don't you be a balloon like that? Why don't you take on that role that you are going to be a beacon to people? You're going to be a navigation aid. You're not going to be as high up as the North Star because you'll be able to talk to people. But you can help them find their way out of the forest of fear and doubt and, am I going to live? I don't know. And they say, and he says, and she says, and you can help them see and hear and feel and know some of the possibility. This is the prayer from letter 8 of Christ Returns, and it is pluralized for the service. Father, Mother, Life, you are our life, our constant support, our health, our protection, our perfect fulfillment of every need, and our highest inspiration. We ask you to reveal the true reality of yourself to us. We know it is your will that we shall be fully illumined, that we may better receive awareness of your presence within and around us. We believe and know that this is possible. We believe that you protect and maintain us within perfect love. We know that our eventual purpose is to express you. As we speak to you, we know you are perfectly receptive of us, for you are universal loving intelligence which has so marvelously designed this world and brought it into visible form. We know that as we ask you to speak to us, we are sending out a consciousness searchlight into your divine consciousness. And as we listen, you will be penetrating our human consciousness and coming ever closer to our increasingly receptive minds and hearts. We commit ourselves and our lives into your care. Thank you. It is so.